Next up, another classic, back from the, it's an old school one. It's called the clap test. And so what you do is you clap, and then it's a test. And that's how Magellan syncs
back
up the audio.
Back to reality. Yup, there goes gravity. Yup, there goes gravity. Yup, I'm falling down and there's no gravity.
Welcome to Scape Chats. This is episode 45. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by my friends in the endless abyss that is this episode. It's Magellan and our guest host and Twitter friend. This week, we watched season 4, episode 18, Prayer, which was written by Justin Monjo, directed by Peter Andrikides, and it aired February 21st, 2003 in the US. What happened? Everything got sad so fast. Omens, why did you want... What up? What's, first of all, hi. Hello.
Hi.
You're back.
Welcome back.
Yes. Hello. It's wow. Excellent to be back.
For what an episode? For just a bleak one.
I needed to do a Claudia Black episode. There's my explanation. After the choice, that was... Yeah. No.
You needed to make up for us completely messing up our discussion of the choice. You hated that episode and you said, I wish you guys would be better podcasters.
Pretty much, yeah.
Nah, gang, Prayer is real nasty. I had the pleasure of watching this one in person with Magellan, which was a good experience just because I like watching television with friends.
But also, we needed each other.
Yeah, I would have. I needed someone to hold me because by the end of it, it was like, oh yay.
Yeah, like but I've during been. I wrote this down in the beginning. I've been completely desensitized to this episode. Like, it scared the living shit out of me. Like the first couple times, and now it's like watch number 4, and it's just a really fun time right now.
You're just numb.
You're at a weird part of the bell curve before it gets super sad again.
Yeah, you're gonna get older and then like get closer to Claudia Black's age of the show, and then it's gonna be like, oh no, oh, I don't want to have children. I don't want to go to another country where people speak different languages. I don't want to get captured. I mean, I would hope you know.
Right.
Okay, so that's the thing though, right? It's the whole thing is like pitch black, super dark, in a different way than the choice was, because the choice is like sad, but it's like melodramatic, whereas this one is like, no, this is like real things to be really, really sad about, because Aaron is on not exactly Catrazzi, it's the Catrazzi waiting bin, as I like to call it.
It's like purgatory Catrazzi.
Yeah, she's reading the Highlights magazine while she waits.
Yeah, and she's waiting for her name to be called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scare and heat probes, torture. I like to call this one actually Aaron's nerve.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very true. Very good parallel.
Torture.
It's pretty elegantly split into two plots between John and Scorpius going on a sad ass buddy cop adventure.
Oh my god.
It's like supposed to be fun, like, oh, the two of us are gonna gang up and we're gonna go on a thing.
I do not think it's supposed to be fun. I'm sorry.
Well, but it starts so simple. It's like, we just need to go to this unrealized reality. It's right here. I know how to get to it. We get the information. We come back. And it, like, they leave and like everyone's dead. That's how they leave the state of things in that world. And then Aaron is busy being tortured and hanging out with her gal pal on the ship, who's not really a gal pal.
Vrina?
His name is Rain. There you go.
Vrina.
That's the name.
By the way, just a little like fun fact here. Claudia Black loves the actress that played her. Sandy Gore.
She's a good actress. Yeah. She's very good. Her like neck thing, the first thing I did when I saw her, I was like, no, I don't want to look at that. Magellan, make it go away. There's something disturbing about the way she looks, but the episode, like we were saying, is so just, or all the stuff on that ship is so gross in general that you, like, again, you just become desensitized to her, like, weird neck protrusion and long face. It's like disturbing in a, like, an HR Giger kind of way. You're just like, oh, why does that exist? Why? And Giger is actually a very accurate comparison. If people don't know, he's the guy who did the concept art that became the first Alien film and, like, worked on the designs of those aliens. Everything on that ship is like gross and sad and dark and slimy. It's a really good place for Aaron to have a pregnancy adventure. It's a fun little baby journey.
That is the least apt description of this episode pretty much ever.
Yeah.
It's all the way off pace. So she is on there and she's hanging out with Rina, and everything is really bad. And she's getting tortured a lot, but yeah, she's like, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I just want
to clarify what the word hanging out means in this context. It means that they are prisoners of the Skarens. They were imprisoned.
Yeah, they're not in a good place. Yeah. They are absolutely prisoners. And we said last week, like, there's something about putting Aaron in trouble. Oh, people haven't... All right, I'm going to start the sentence again because people have listened to last week's episode, even though it hasn't been released yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So we spoke last week about how it's like when you put Aaron in trouble, that's like instantly maximum stakes for this show.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that she got herself out of that situation, because she very quickly was like, no one's gonna rescue me, no one's gonna get me out of this, like, I got this. And she really handles it.
Yeah,
she was also praying and like waiting for John to save her. That's how you get the title.
John, you were saying?
Oh, I mean, I think we were both, Alan, you and I both were annoyed by the fact that bringing home the beacon ends with like, and now our damsel has been captured and the man finally has something to do. Here we go, time for the man's journey. So it's really cool to see Aaron's side of it for a large portion of this episode. Like, it's kind of the main focus of the episode is seeing Aaron. And she does do some badass shit, but Omens is right that she's also praying, please save John. So, like, yeah, how do you parse that?
That's, like, the only bad part of this episode is kind of the way it's set up. But also, she's desperate. She knows she's desperate. And she does do some badass shit. But, actually, wait. The badass shit and the praying for John to save her kind of coincide in a way that I think is pretty cool.
Like, by the end, they do, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the whole time she's like, oh, if you're out there speaking to God or whoever she might be speaking to, she's saying like, if you can help me, if you can get John to rescue me, then that would be really great, and I would be way more into like talking to you. And then it doesn't work out, and then by the end she's like, I'm not telling you anything, you get nothing out of me.
Yeah,
well, Jean Cabu is the name of the god. But by the way, that opening scene.
What was the opening scene?
Just Aaron with the light sort of like bouncing off her face in pitch black on the floor praying to Jean Cabu. And then Vrina comes in and she gets to her. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to speak about the fact that like season one, episode one, Aaron would have never prayed. You know what I mean?
Of course not.
Like that's something to be said. Sure, she's praying and it's unfortunate that she's like, John, save me, but at the same time, that is a kind of emotional victory in the arc of Aaron's son, that she is fully admitting her vulnerability and her need for somebody else.
It's a lot of character development to say like, hey, I can't, this isn't gonna work by myself. Like, the thing I want more than anything is to be helped, and to be able to ask for help is like a very mature thing for that character to do, as someone who's grown up not getting any help from people
and not being allowed to ask for it at all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stuff is handled really well. Also, her prisoner, the person who has her in prison, the woman, like not the partner that's with her, but the like lady that is talking to her, that's Morok, I believe.
The nurse lady.
Vrina is the nurse lady. Morok is the spy.
Oh,
whoops. We've been talking about Morok the whole time. Vrina's the one who's like, yeah. I got this right. I got you, fam.
Okay. I was confused. We've been talking about Morok the whole time?
I'll confirm some words right now. Here we go. Ready?
Okay.
Vrina's the nurse. Great.
Yes.
Yeah, she's the one who's like, oh, you're terrible, I hate you. And then it's like, no, wait, are you pregnant? I know what being pregnant is like, that's so sad. Morok is the neck goiter, sad, evil spy person with the babies. That's that. Yes, mm-hmm. We got it.
And speaking of Morok, I believed her entire argument beginning to end.
What is her argument?
Like, I've had 6 pregnancies and they terminated 3 of them. And just the whole, like, I'm not a spy type thing.
Oh, you're saying you bought into her story.
I bought into that story. And every time I watch it now, I just, like, I see more holes in her argument. Mm. In her, like, story that can't be filled.
Like what?
Like, I don't, like, what is it? I didn't really write much of it down.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, her argument is basically like, they, because Majan pointed this out while we were watching it, but like, she is the experiment that led to the birth of Scorpius. Like, she's that same experiment being done again.
Broadly speaking, yeah.
And so she's just like, oh, I know what this is like, and I've had this happen to me so many times, and they have me in an endless nightmare loop. I should just kill myself.
The thing with the the thing that made me think of this is, like, the fruit on her planet grows like a metal skin, and Aaron asks, like, hey, why can't you dissolve your coughs?
Oh, yeah.
She can dissolve it with her saliva, and she's like, no, only thin metal. And I'm like, what kind of weird...
What power is that? That's not how acid works at all.
You could just keep thinning the metal. Like, what does that mean?
That's a good point. We did pick up on that while we were watching it. We were like, that seems nonsense. And then Aaron says that, and you're like, oh, yeah, full of beans. Absolutely full of beans.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are. I bet this is probably totally an episode you could rewatch and, like, pick up on how her story doesn't hold up at all. Because when I was watching it, yeah, I was also just like, yeah, of course she's telling the truth. This is, like, a sad story that is going to end with her killing herself, and then that's going to be the end of that, and Aaron's going to get out somehow.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I guess something... Yeah, so that's part of it. The, like, her having the pills in her hand also didn't... You could have seen through that. Like, how did she get the pills to her hand?
Yeah.
That's a question.
Like Rina's favorite mode of, like, giving people stuff is via injection anyway.
Right.
Like,
ooh.
That's true. My question is, and we'll get into the, like, plot in a second, I guess, or, like, kind of run down the rest of this side of the story. But my question was, no, you know what? Okay, here's what I'm going to run down. So basically, what's the big Scaren dude's name? What's his name?
Jennick, I think?
Yes, Jennick. It is.
Okay.
Played by Jason Clarke, by the way, who's like a current actor who still does stuff, like Zero Dark Thirty and Planet of the Apes, and, you know? He was George Wilson in The Great Gatsby.
Oh.
I've heard of him, but I don't know other things or if I've seen any of his work.
I'm just going to call him Gatsby instead of Jennick.
That's perfect.
So Gatsby is... like, doing his little heat powers on Aaron, trying to torture her to figure out where John Crichton is. Which, first of all, how would she know? I think she even says, like, on Moya. Like, what do you want me to say?
Yeah,
he's on Moya. Great. There you go.
I don't know where Moya is. Bada bing, bada boom, you lose.
Yeah. He's torturing her to try to figure out where John Crichton is. Then it's found out she's super susceptible to the heat for some reason. Uh-oh, nurse lady, figure it out. I figured it out. She's pregnant. Let's move her to the pregnant spot where everybody's pregnant. Okay, here we are. Everybody's pregnant here. He's torturing her a little bit more. You got to tell me what's up. Then she's still not telling him what's up. Okay, let me show you what I can do to you. I can burn a baby inside of you.
And you'll live through it.
Yeah,
so...
That was disturbing.
Yikes. Thank you very much, Farscape, for giving his powers also the ability to give us x-ray vision and heating something up.
X-ray abortion, yeah.
Thank you for showing us that whole CG process that somebody had to spend hours of their life making.
I never want to see that shot for the rest of my life, ever.
I don't remember how disturbed I was by that shot. Like, I think I kind of saw it coming in a weird way.
Yeah.
But it was, like, it was more screaming that freaked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, good screaming. Good screaming. Huh.
But anyway, yikes. Like, oh, man. I mean, now I'm more on board with the, like, Scarens are bad thing. I think I was skeptical when our only big source of Scarens are bad was Scorpius, but now it's like, okay, they're really doing some bad stuff here.
Yeah, the Peacekeepers at least have a moral code because they have, like, limits and rules, but it just seems like the Scarens are, like, pure killers at this point.
Hey, say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, dude, but at least it's an ethos.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
That's my Big Lebowski reference for the day.
Okay, I don't know what that was, but
people will appreciate it.
The thing with the peacekeepers is like it's very difficult to figure out what their moral code is, not like because right. like outside of high, like we're seeing all like the regimented like sort of like breakoffs of birth.
Yeah, we're seeing people who left because they wanted to be good people and they were surrounded by a society that didn't encourage kindness and understanding. Mm-hmm. But we don't see, and this is the really end of the argument, is like we don't see any good Skarrans. I wouldn't call Scorpius a good half Skarran. I would say that he hates them a lot, and he's the only real Skarran that we've seen that isn't like a Skarran. Complete monster.
Who?
In that one episode.
The dude from the episode with the intersex character. I forget the name.
Yeah.
There's a good Skarran in that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's okay. And the Rigel has a girlfriend.
Right. Yeah, remember that thrilling episode?
I love Farscape. You know, the one with the intersex character and where the puppet has a girlfriend. Farscape!
Anyway, so Gatsby does a horrible thing, a horribly unspeakable thing. Then they start pumping Aaron full of truth serum. Great moment where they're like, she's like, I'll tell you the truth without the truth serum. And then they give her the truth serum and she's like, I wasn't going to tell you the truth.
The line is, of course I'd lie to you, you stupid bitch.
Yeah.
Excellent use of the two swear words of the season.
Yep.
Or one of the two swear words of the season. The other one's coming up later, I think.
Hey! Yeah.
So that happens. They keep giving her truth stuff. And she starts to forcibly construct some kind... So I want a little clarification here. Some kind of story about... And this proves to be false, I guess. But some story about, like, a dude, a contact of hers when she was, like, being an assassin and... They got together and it's his baby, but then that's not true, right?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like half truth because we know she did have a contact when she was an assassin in between the seasons 3 and 4, but I don't think they had a physical relationship. So I think she just took something that was already there and kind of like built on it.
Exaggerated it. So are we ever going to learn about this whole thing where she was an assassin?
No. Okay. At least not in the show. Like maybe in the comics. I haven't read the comics, so I don't know.
That could be a fun thing to show off in the comics. Just like, hey, here's the assassin years. Infinitely comparing the show to a game, the Aaron's Son side quest, where she just does assassin things for a while. But I honestly don't think we need, at the end of the day, I don't think we need to see that stuff because we know what came of it. We got the episode that was the result of it. And I mean, like, what are we going to see of it? It's going to be like, oh, I did an assassination thing because I had to, and I was justified in the moment. And then I came back. Like, not seeing it is actually interesting to me because it highlights the time difference between seasons 3 and 4. And makes me be like, oh, everyone did something. And we don't know everything. Like, it detaches us from them in a little bit of a way.
Yeah. And again, that is really cool. But it's not really, like, usually something you'd think about this late in the season. And it's really interesting that we're bringing it up right now. Because I didn't think about this at all when I was watching.
I just, I don't like the idea that Aaron was assassinating people. It doesn't feel right.
But it's in character. Maybe not. I don't know. Like, again, kind of. It's something that basically this entire episode is Aaron's desperation.
Yeah.
And assassinating people is something that Aaron would do to get by.
Yeah.
Just like Chiana has sold herself.
Right. And I mean, we see the results of like Aaron still to this day, no matter how much heart she's gained from being on Team Moya, can still murk a fool if she has to. Because she gets really clever by the end. She stops being the like sad prisoner. And very quickly turns on her former compatriot, Morok. And they're talking, and they're talking about the pregnancy and about the baby. Like, we get a lot of Morok's backstory. But none of it is ultimately essential because, like we said, it's all BS. And she eventually starts, like, picking apart the mistakes in her story. And then you get this final moment where Morok has lost the baby in her, unfortunately. And she's saying, like, oh, I had all these pills that I've been storing up somehow. I'm gonna do it right now. You and me, let's do suicide pact. You down? And then it seems like Aaron's gonna do it, but you're like, no, but how? Where is this gonna possibly go? And they really do a good job of holding it until the last possible second, mm-hmm. where Aaron, like, puts it in her mouth and then goes, now, wait a second. Now, just hold on 1 minute. You knew as well as I did that these drugs aren't going to kill either of us. And then, because she's also, like, Morok is being like, but your child, like, aren't you afraid about your child? And then she's like, is it really his? Is it really the man that you loved? You know, like, she's basically being like, hey, can you say the thing that they're trying to get out of you? Like, between you and me, as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I see what's going on here. Yeah. Yeah, you're trying to keep, you're, yeah. I'm not telling you anything. And then she chokes her out. Does she break out, right? That's accurate.
She breaks her neck, doesn't she?
Yeah, gets out of the, like, gurney thing, like, the prison thing, and, like, snaps her neck. I don't know how she got out, but she does.
So, okay, I have a question. Didn't they find out it was John? Didn't she tell them it was John after a lot of the serum stuff?
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, only, like, John Crichton, only ever Crichton. That's pretty much the line.
So then why did...
She never explicitly says it, though.
She didn't specifically say that the baby was his.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
They probably know. The Scaren guy probably, or, you know, Gatsby probably already knows. But the pregnant person, Morak, was probably just trying to be like, I want you to say it so that we have the evidence and can just send this off to finalization and kill you.
Sure.
And then she's like, nope, you're getting no confirmation from me. Like, she's not actually winning. She's not, like, saving any information. It probably got out, to be honest. But she is getting herself out. And then we get that amazing, I mean, we're going to loop around back to the B plot, but we get that amazing final scene where Aaron is on the floor and it's like pitch black dark. And she looks up to the sky and her eyes are like darker than ever. Like, she has like literally black makeup under her eyes. She says, now, Jonka Brew, you haven't listened and you haven't helped. And I'm running out of time. So I'm going to forget about you. I am now willing to make a deal with anyone, with anything to save my child. Not because I can, but because I have to.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it
Yes.
And then credits.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Moya Bag for episode 45. This is Magellan here to read off your questions and your comments and nothing else. You can have your thoughts read on the Moya Bag every week in one of three ways. You can contact us on Twitter at @scapechats. You can find our weekly Reddit threads on reddit.com/r/farscape, or you can email us. escapechats@gmail.com. Normally, this is the part of the Moya Bag where I start with Twitter and tell you about our weekly memo from... But Omens is on the episode this week, and not one of you had the gall to usurp her throne. So, moving on to Reddit, over at our thread at reddit.com/r/farscape, we got a couple sweet comments here. One is from Reddit user Trilonis, who says, "A Constellation of Doubt is just one of the best episodes of anything. While there is no physical conflict in this episode, there is a conflict which the episode breaks it down beautifully. It is the greatest conflict humans, aliens, or anyone else faces as a species, in fact. It is the mental and philosophical, metaphysical battle which we and they will more than likely always face, ourselves. And while it doesn't shy away from addressing so much of the baggage that comes with simply being, it's also hopeful for where we could eventually end up with a little understanding." I think that's a great way to put it. We have a chunky, lengthy comment here from frequent Reddit commenter Blue Blaze Spear. Love you, Blue Blaze Spear. Is there like a way, like, love you, Blaze? Is that cool to shorten it? I don't know. Love you, Spear. No, I like Blaze. Blue Blaze Spear says, "It's weird to say this, but this is probably the first time in a while that I've heard you guys cover two episodes that I love back to back. I want to give Bringing Home the Beacon its due, but it's hard for me to not fly right past it and talk about A Constellation of Doubt, which is usually at the top of my most favorite episode list." Blue Blaze Spear agrees that a ladies-only episode was necessary at this point and kind of overdue, going on to comment that A Constellation of Doubt is an example of Farscape upending a trope, specifically upending the trope of the clip show, by using clips of all new footage instead of rehashing old footage to save on budget. There are a lot of day-in-the-life elements there, too. And I have the DVDs, and the stuff that didn't make it in is just as solid as what made it to the screen. That stuff I would love to see. I'm very curious. Bobby's relation being retconned stuck out to Blue Blaze Spear, I guess, because it was so recent. I don't know. I didn't register it at all, because he was just like a dumb kid who was hanging around. Addressing one of our plot questions about why everybody could understand what the aliens were saying on the program, Blue Blaze Spear posits that Moya's crew perhaps just figured out how to speak English while they were on Earth. And then goes on to say, "Not to kick off another translator microbe technical question, I imagine that learning new languages is made a lot easier if you have them, and there were indications that the crew had been picking up the language even before they got to Earth.
This explanation is just as much of a stretch as anything, but to me, it seems fractionally more credible than everyone else getting microbes. Okay, yeah, I'll buy it. I think that I can buy that these aliens have quicker language acquisition than humans. Here's a fun paragraph. Blue Blaze Spear says, I thought that all the main cast were acting their tails off for this episode. I remember way back when you guys were watching season one and you asked the question, can Ben Browder act? The first thing I thought of was his PTSD scene from A Constellation of Doubt, and he just crushes it there. It's one skill for an actor to be able to cry on cue, but it's another thing to be able to play someone who's on the verge of tears but trying to hold it together. That scene was just shot so well, and it was acted so well, and it managed to address something that's been hinted at for a while. Our curious talk-first hero has become flinchy and paranoid, and quick to pull a trigger, and this little trip back to Earth has showed him how different he had become. Blueblaze Spear makes the point that Scorpius wasn't necessarily happy when John came to him to make the deal, but more, he just knew that it was going to happen, because he's this guy who has his pieces everywhere, and he fully believes that he will eventually succeed. And also makes the point that John, we have a pretty good sense of why John goes to Scorpius for the help over anyone else. He wants the guy who won't hesitate to get his hands dirty to reach the end goal. This is John Crichton at the end of his rope. Goes on to say, Alan, you were asking for a source in regards to the Sci-Fi Channel asking them to make the show more like South Park, and I believe that's most quoted from an article from SFX Magazine when they talked to various cast and crew after the cancellation. Here's the full text, which I'll put in the show notes for this episode, for anyone who's interested, but know that it contains a spoiler from the final episode. However, here's the quote from David Kemper that I was referencing. So now I'm going to read this quote from David Kemper. The next request Kemper faced from the network was to alter the style of the show. They were saying, if we could make it more like Stargate, everyone would love it, he says. I knew that was wrong. We'd piss off our core audience, and nobody new is going to know the show's on the air if it's not promoted properly. How do people watch The Sopranos? They have good publicity, which we had, and lots of promotion, which we didn't have. Sci-Fi kept saying they didn't have the money to do it. The argument continued during the pre-production period. We were getting Make It More Like South Park, a small show on a small cable channel that got the cable channel a lot of heat, Kemper continues. In the end, we said to them, what do you want? And they said they wanted a bigger audience. We said, that's not our job. Our job is to make a good show that will hold a bigger audience, but you've got to deliver the bigger audience. Then they moved us to 10 p.m., and it seemed like a lot of things were stacking up against the show. Blue Blaze Spear finishes by saying, I look forward to your coverage of Prayer. I think of it as a decent episode, but there is a scene or two that involves issues with bodily autonomy that I don't know that I'm thrilled about. I must certainly agree with that. Final comment here is from Johnny Fogg. Love that, Johnny Fogg. I'm not the biggest Chiana fan, but I like how she carries this episode in Kansas. Ordinarily, her hedonism is only going to get the crew into trouble. Here it is suggested that there is a logic to her lifestyle. Kind of reminded me of Cillian Murphy in Breakfasts on Pluto. Never heard of that. Unlike the unrealized reality where she is the slutty teen who gets gored in a slasher flick. Flick. Thank you so much, everybody who commented in the Reddit thread. Moving on now to our email address. We have an email from Nstatic Dax covering Prayer. Dax says, so anyways, just a quick note for this week. I'm glad that in the episode of Constellation of Doubt, we got to see the cop return like I had thought I remembered. I knew I recalled seeing him again, but I thought it happened right after the Kansas episode and was wondering what happened to that scene. On to Prayer. John and Scorpy become blood brothers. Is it the 80s again? I remember doing that as a kid on the playgrounds in school when we were like 9 years old. We'd poke our arms with a needle and rub forearms together. Jesus. Jeez. Where the hell were my parents when I was growing up? LOL. Wow. Alan and I grew up with Pokemon, so I guess that was our blood pact, I guess. Trading Mons. And Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Fun. Aaron, meanwhile, is getting microwaved extra crispy by a Scaron who wants to know who the baby daddy. That's an accurate representation. Side note here from Dax saying that it looks like the alternate Moya was pretty much the same, but maybe a little bit cleaner. Scorpius quickly shows he doesn't much care for the Leviathan shore people, and he's more than willing to kill them instantly in order to get Stark Kozu to find the info they need. Dax says that he thought that the Eren being in sort of a crucifixion pose in her sleep scene was a little on the nose, and then finishes out by saying, overall, I thought Prayer was a pretty good story. Sure, you need to have seen quite a bit of the series to fully understand what was going on. I like to think you can just enjoy it all by itself for an hour if you just happen to find it on TV while channel surfing. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode, as always. Thank you, Dax, and thank you, everybody, who is listening right now. And everybody who's not listening right now, but will listen in the future. But then you will be listening now, because you are creating the time in which the episode exists, and not me. Yes. Once again, you can reach us through Twitter at @SkateChats, through our weekly Reddit threads, reddit.com/r/farscape, through our email address, scapechats@gmail.com. Also, little reminder, I think we're going to be saying this at the end of episodes as well, but we want to get some more voices in the mix for our final episode. So if you have any broad thoughts about Farscape, about highlights, lowlights, why you love the show, your favorite characters, anything like that, feel free to record yourself for a couple minutes at most, and email it to us, and we will put a montage of people's little clips in our final series recap episode. And with that, so ends the Moya Bag, and so continues episode 45 of Scape Chats.
Yes, that is a very, very powerful scene, and I just remember my heart like dropping. It was really, just really fantastic. And that's sort of a parallel to the first scene as well. Like, it definitely comes full circle, especially as I said, with the lighting and the bouncing off of her face and her on the floor.
Even physically though, because in the first scene she's like lifting her head to the sky, and in this scene it ends with her looking down and being like, I got no one but me, I'm in it for me. And that's very exciting. Or I'm in it for the baby, but you know.
Yes.
Very excited. Very like almost fist pumpy, even though this episode was so bleak that I was like barely able to garner excitement after that.
Yeah, it also still just like, it ties in, her language there ties into this idea of making a deal with the devil, which John does.
Okay.
John so does that.
We are wrapping around to the B plot.
Yes. John and Scorpius. Why does he pick Scorpius, by the way? They do a blood pact, first of all, which is like a good scene.
They suck each other's thumbs.
Very sexy.
It is the most erotic scene in the show.
I actually wrote something down for this. I took notes in general, but yeah.
Ooh, writing.
I just put, I love this scene as much as you do, but I remember, like, the first time I watched this, being, like, really concerned that Ben Browder was acting really passive, and, like, that Wayne Pigram wasn't getting anything out of him, because I just wasn't feeling anything from this. And I realize now that I mistook Ben Browder being really passive, or when it was actually, like, John Crichton being wildly uncomfortable with this thing.
Right.
Exactly. Because it's a different custom than his, and also Scorpius is supposed to control that scene, because he's like, hey, this is my thing that I do, I want you to do it so that we can work together.
And then you just, the only way that I'm gonna out, drop of blood.
Ugh. yum.
Do you think Scorpius was just making it up?
He just wanted John to suck his thumb for fun,
just to see if he could make him do it.
He opened up the message thread that he has going with Bracca, and Bracca's like, I'll meet you for lunch later, and he's like, no, Bracca, hold on, I got John to suck my thumb with the blood trick again. And then he sent like 10, Bracca sent him like 10 heart emojis, and he's like, send pics. I love, but yeah, so they get in the ship, they get in the Farscape 1, I believe, or like some prowler, I think.
Yeah, it's Farscape 1, the only one that can fly through wormholes, as we learned in season 3. Of course.
So they get in the Farscape 1, and just a really obnoxious series of nauseating shots where the ship is spinning because it's going through a wormhole.
Yeah.
And it's
that
like they go on for way too long.
Oh my god.
And then they end up in the wrong place, and it's just spinning.
Constantly. The camera constantly spins.
A long ass time.
Oh my god.
Peter Andrikides was like, just don't put it down. Don't slow down, please. Because it's like a steady spinning too. Oh my god, it's like legitimately nauseating.
I don't know why they even put that in there.
Because, what's it called? Axes are irrelevant in space. It doesn't matter what's up or down. Like,
I know, I guess, but like, spinning. Why did they insert that scene? That scene is entirely unnecessary. Oh, we ended up in the wrong place.
Yeah. Oh, let's go back. Yeah, I think they needed to pad for time or something. I don't know if they even talk about anything of substance.
No.
Not really.
It's not even a good, like, John Scorpius character moment.
No, not really.
Oh, yeah.
There's like one or two lines exchanged that I kind of liked, but that's about it. I kind of just like the lines exchanged where they're stranded for a second, and John says, Scorpius first says, ironic, wouldn't it be if we were to die here together? A very, very romantic line. John says, yeah, we're regular Romeo and Juliet. Damn, this spinning makes me feel like I'm drinking mezcal. You got something like mezcal? Drink the drink, eat the worm, whatever the heck John is saying, blah, blah, blah. Then he says, just for the record, if you'd gotten the information and were able to control wormholes, what would you have done with it? Scorpius says, taken over as much of the universe as possible, found your home planet and destroyed it. John says, that's not funny. And Scorpius says, no, I would use the wormholes as a deterrent against my any future scare and attack. But that, I just like that because, like, Scorpius doesn't get to joke around a lot.
Yeah, and that's, like, oddly romantic sassy. In a weird way.
Yeah, they were, they were flirting.
They're cute together. That's why I was, like, hoping that we could get more of that stuff, but it's Farscape. Like, we're not gonna get a whole episode of John and Scorpio. Like, we got that with Harvey. You know, we got enough of that.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, and I think it's interesting for them to show that the difference between Harvey and Scorpius is that Scorpius has an objective, and he wants to, he's, like, incredibly goal-oriented. That's his whole modus operandi. So they get to the, well, they get to the first unrealized reality, and they're like, whoops, it's the spinning dimension. And then they turn around, they go into the right one, and it's the unrealized reality from the episode, Unrealized Reality, and we got Star Kozu. I love Star Kozu. And we've got Naranti Rigel, which is unnecessary, and we've got Jewel Jargo, and of course we got Aaron Chiana, which is
Claudia Black interesting. 3 hours of makeup.
Yeah, that... I was like, I hope they filmed these in the same day or something, because this whole setup seems exhausting to do. And the first thing that they do is they're like, hey, we need... I like that this whole thing is just... It's very Farscape because it's all them talking and trying to understand the mechanics. Because they're like, hey, Scorp... I want to keep going to call her Scorp Kozu. I think that's my ship name. That's what that is. for Scorpius and Sikozu. I only like boring heterosexual ships. That's the only things I like. No, Star Kozu, basically, they're like, hey, we need you to tell me about Katratzi. And just like with Constellation of Doubt, she's like, I don't frowning know what you're talking about. And then they're like, but you said it in the mind thing. And then she's like, well, I have to be in the mind thing to remember what I say in the mind thing, because otherwise it wipes.
Shakira State is what she called it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep calling it the mind thing. but so they're like, all right, let's just put you back in the mind thing. Easy. And she's like, no, but someone needs to die. And they're like, cool, who do we shoot? And do they shoot someone before messing up?
No, yeah. I don't. Wait, well, they do?
Scorpius just straight up right there shoots Rigel Naranti, I think. And
is that's not the part that I'm going to talk about, right? That's not the hilarious Parmesan?
No, and then Starkozy's like, no, it has to be somebody that I love.
I hated them. They stole the crackers from the pantry once, and now I don't like them anymore. We're in a big fight. Thank you for killing them.
And
no, but she's definitely like, yeah, it has to be my true love.
So this plot is kind of stupid in terms of, like, what happens, because it's John and Scorpius. They go to the wrong place. Whoops, we're in the wrong place. Let's fix it. Then they go to the unrealized reality. Whoops, we did the wrong thing. Now we got to do a different thing. It's not – there isn't really anything going on in that plot of substance. But they shoot – Scorpius shoots somebody. John is like, you can't just shoot people. You can't do that. Scorpius says, like, don't worry about it. We know that they're going to get killed in this reality pretty soon anyway, so it doesn't matter. Let's just get our job done. So then they're looking around for somebody that Stark Kozu loves, and they settle upon the Aaron Chiarin. Chiarin, thank you. And they tie them up, and Scorpius is like, all right, John, now you got to shoot her. Don't worry, it's not really Aaron, but go ahead, just shoot her so we can get out of here.
John's like, I just shot her in the face like 2 episodes ago, dog. Come on. Yeah.
And then John is like, I can't do it. Scorpius goes, I can.
As the scene was happening, I wish we had like recorded this somehow. We both looked at it, and then I'm like, John's not going to be able to do it. And he's like, I can't do it. And then I'm like, and then Scorpius is going to say, but I can. And he goes, but I can. And I'm like, yes, I've watched every TV show. I know everything. He just takes the gun from John, shoots Chiarin in the face, and then Star Kozu is like, oh, now not only have you killed my love, but you've killed everybody on this ship. But there's nobody left for me. You're the worst.
But the weird thing, like, the cool thing for me, or I don't know, this isn't cool or weird, it's just a thing that I like. How, like, after Chiarin dies and Stark does the mind thing,
yeah.
John will just, like, goes up and, like, starts, like, stroking her hair. And Scorpius is just there, like, rolling his eyes. Like, can we please get out of here? I don't have time for your sentimentality.
We gotta go, dude. It is totally that. That was another thing we noticed. It's just like, wow, really? And Scorpius is like, the car is parked in the back and it's burning mileage. Can we move? And John's like, you're filling me with trauma. You're the nonstop trauma maker. And then, yeah, the Star Kozu goes into her mind melty state again. And tells them that Katrat. Well, what does she actually tell? What's the concrete info that they get out of this?
That Katratzi is disguised as a moon somewhere.
And Trelax, it mimics the orbit. And Scorpius is like, oh, I know that planet. Let's go there. And then go there next episode.
Great.
So crazy. But then he's just like, oh, that place? All you had to tell me was that place. I know exactly where we're going. Great. It's like, wow, we have to do a lot of work to get that. I guess the universe is big, but it's just like, oh, we're good? All right. Gotta go. Boop-a-doop. So we have our adventure now, and Erin is now on her own. I just picture her, like, knife in mouth, like, gonna predator her way out of Katrazi and, like, single-handedly murder everyone in there. And then John and Scorpius and the gang are gonna get there and be like, Erin, we've come to rescue... oh, no.
like, all I can everyone's say there. In response to that is nothing, because no matter what I say, it'll spoil it. Yeah.
Well, it's Farscape, so it's not gonna go well. Like, okay. Come on.
No, but like, it doesn't go well, but also it's not that satisfying.
Oh no. Oh well, yeah, because yeah, we're getting into it's the finale, but like, kind of, we didn't plan for this to be the finale sort of thing.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk about that a lot in the next. I have, like, let's just say I have talking points planned out, folks, listening at home, as well as Omens, who's gonna be listening eventually in the future. We have talking points for, like, the whole show is gonna get canceled. They didn't know about that, etc., etc. It's sad. It's frustrating to see a show that you like so much clearly going to some sort of end game, but it's like, this wasn't the end game they planned. Mm-hmm. So
this is where
I guess
it really
starts
to get big. You, like, how far have you gotten beyond this?
We have not watched the next episodes as of this recording.
Okay.
So, but we're going to try and get ahead of stuff soon. Whatever. Yes.
Just, yeah.
Mezcal, by the way, is a distilled alcoholic beverage made from any type of agave plant native to Mexico. Yay! Fun facts about alcohol, folks.
Yay!
Fun. Chat. Anyways, it's time for the background info.
Yeah. Narandi does not appear in this episode. However, Melissa Jaffer still appears as Rigel Narandi in the unrealized reality.
Nice.
Adding the scene in which Scorpius shoots the alternate Rigel was intentional and done to remind the audience of Scorpius's edge. What? When he...
Edge Lord Scorpius.
Wait, what do they mean adding the scene was intentional?
He didn't need to shoot shoot Rigel Narandi. He just did that to be like, look how crazy he is. Wow, sure. What a savage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Andrew Prowse noted that this episode was probably the closest translation from script to screen of any Farscape episode.
And I think it worked pretty well, honestly.
Yeah. The shot of the fake abortion was cut from the UK transmission. David Kemper had earlier expressed concerns on the scene until it was pointed out that it was later revealed that the abortion was a fake.
No, guys.
Wait, it was?
But we thought it yeah, because everything she's doing is fake. Like, she probably didn't even have real babies.
Yeah, and I was thinking when I was rewatching this, like, why? How do you engineer the fake abortion? Why do you spend that much money on, like, a spy to, like, get her, like, fake kill her baby? How do you do that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put that past the Scarrons, but I think that, yeah, what they're saying here and what I thought after watching the episode was, like, none of this was real. The whole thing was a ploy and, like, a visual trick that they played on Erin to make her think that all this stuff was happening.
I thought it was real, though, because doesn't she still say that, like, she did have 6 kids, but they all died?
No.
Like, none of them were real?
She's saying that when Erin is like, wait, you know, there's something wrong with your story. And she's like, no. And then she recounts it and says, I had 6 children, 3 of them died, you know.
But then didn't she go back on that and say that all of them died?
No. And then Erin sort of grabs her neck and she's like, have you ever been pregnant? Have you ever had a child? And she's just like, no.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then the neck gets snapped.
But the point is, that scene is just as violent and messed up because we don't know that it's fake in the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if you said what you're watching is fake, like, yeah, all TV is fake, dog.
Thanks, dog.
I know that's not what an abortion looks like, but it still looked terrible and made me a little bit traumatized. Yeah. Ugh.
Claudia Black stated that the original plans for her flashbacks would have shown her and her lover humping against a wall.
That's a very Claudia thing to say.
Humping against a wall. She described the chair she had to sit in as something out of Dead Ringers. Footholes had to be drilled into the Tim Ferrier-designed torture chairs at the last minute to help the actors recover between scenes. Ferrier worried needlessly that the producers would not like the chairs after their construction.
Dead Ringers is like an 80s horror film.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm guessing chairs. They were painful?
I guess. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess.
This movie looks really messed up. Sorry, go on.
David Kemper was so impressed with Jason Clarke's performance as Gatsby, he had him written into the final episodes of the season. Hey.
Oh. Nice.
I like him too.
Yeah. I am not that person. I don't like him very much. We do get a new character that I like, but I can't say her name yet because she appears next episode.
Oh.
Can I just say something real quick that you're probably going to find out later?
Go for it.
Ben Browder's wife, Francesca Buller,
we saw that character.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
Bringing home the beacon.
Oh, that chick. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, her.
Oh, you're not caught up on the podcast, are
not.
You, friend?
I am not.
Gotcha. Despite Sokozu Starkozu, being played by Rayleigh Hill and sounding female, Crichton insists on referring... Oh, yeah, this whole thing. Crichton insists on referring to the character as he. It was also previously revealed that this Stark was romantically involved with Aaron in this unrealized reality. Later, he refers to Dargo Jewel as she, although Scorpius prefers it. Thanks, Scorpius, for that.
I don't even want to start... I didn't even want to start digging into the gender pronoun stuff of this alternate reality because it's so muddled. But just, yeah, the part where Scorpius calls them it is like, dude... Nobody prefers it. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're just
Why
an ass.
Why are you being so that way, Scorpius?
Also, you haven't released the episode for Bringing Home the Beacon yet.
All right.
So
well,
don't judge me.
No.
Oh, you right. You right. Wait, have we not? Oh, it's the one that I'm working on. Whoops. I have it on in the background. I'm sorry. You're right. Time continuity.
I mean, I get that Scorpius was like getting it wrong and it was... It's like supposed to be, oh man, Scorpius is being a jerk, but also it wasn't very clear. They weren't very clear about like what the right thing was.
Yeah.
Anyway, Crichton and Scorpius, for reasons unexplained, are able to have the run of the ship on the Bizarro Moya, including firing weapons and killing people without interference from Pilot or the DRDs. And this could possibly be because it would interrupt the tension of the scene and cause interference irrelevant to the plot of the episode. That's something written in the Farscape wiki where somebody wrote something and then somebody else came in and added in, but this could blah, 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 blah. There's no way that one person wrote
right.
that like split person post.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this, I like to imagine that last piece of background information is just somebody who's been writing the background info for years and keeps trying to like explain everything. And then by the end, they're like, no, it's because the tension is bad. Just, oh, I'm exhausted. We're so close. Just accept it. I have no more qualms with the show's like logic anymore. I'm just like, let's get there. You guys know what you're doing.
I can't say what I wanted to say.
Stop! You always do this!
Sorry!
You're like, we have 4 episodes left!
I know!
And 2 cats!
But so
and then we're
gonna
much be able
happens.
To talk about everything. I imagine so. Speaking of what happens, tell me like a little bit of what happens in the background episode summary. What? The episode summaries.
Oh, the episode summaries on the Farscape Encyclopedia Project and from nowhere else.
Absolutely nowhere else. Don't touch. Ugh.
We're watching 3 episodes next week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a 3-parter. Nice.
Yeah, it's a 3-parter. The We're So Screwed 3-parter. First up is season 4, episode 19, We're So Screwed Part 1, Fetal Attraction. The crew of Moya have one chance to infiltrate Scarin space to rescue Aaron's son. When a deadly illness is unleashed, however, success and survival seems less and less likely.
Huh.
Can I just... This is the part where I just sort of tilt my head back and I'm like, I love
Is someone going to die? is this what this is? Oh, it's going to be me, isn't it?
Yeah, you're going to die.
It's going to be you too.
Sweet.
Dope. The second episode is season 4, episode 20,
We're So Screwed Part 2, Hot to Katratzi. The crew of Moya go into the heart of Scarran space in a dangerous attempt to rescue Scorpius. Whoa, okay, hold on. And prevent the Scarran. And prevent the Scarrans from unlocking the secrets of wormholes.
Wow. Mm. I didn't need to know that, but thanks.
Yeah. That happens.
Let's rescue Dad.
Okay. And then the third episode is season 4, episode 21. We're So Screwed, Part 3, La Bamba. With their escape from Katratzi botched, okay, thank you. We could have guessed, but thank you. The crew of Moya must enlist the help of their old enemy if they hope to survive the Scarran's wrath.
Is it Scorpius?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Scorpius. Like,
what are you... No. Good show.
Home stretch! I'm so excited!
Yay.
I'm not. I'm depressed and also excited at the same time.
Okay, be excited for the next 3 episodes, then be depressed.
Yeah, yeah, that seems right.
And yeah, like, oh, whatever. We'll talk about this later. But anyway, the second you finish, we need to talk.
Yeah, well, and we have memos from you every week still. The back and forth will continue. That's the whole, that's like the secret fun thing about Scape Chats is that we have a very nice, vibrant community who love to talk to us.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't it kind of funny that memos is almost an anagram of omens?
It's almost like I planned that, baby, when I called it that.
Did you?
I did not plan it. No. I just wanted to sing a country tune that I wrote. Yeah, what's the next part of the show that we do? Oh, yes.
The end is the next part.
It's the plugs is what it is, actually. Big dummy. The plugs. Here come the plugs. I'm at Alan Ibrahim on Twitter. Magellan's at Just a Fluke on Twitter. Omens, what's your internet?
Old is your Omens on Twitter and Chasing the Skyline on Tumblr.
Good. I love it. I love the Tumblrs. I love follow scapechats.tumblr.com. You got scapechats@gmail.com. You got Farscape Reddit threads every week where we're popping off, and I'm in those comments now just getting real nasty with them, and it's great. And I think that's everything. This has been Scape Chats, finding our way home.